This may include developing additional monitoring requirements specific to this area. And number six, accurately monitor and minimize bycatch of non-target species. That motion passed the Habitat Committee by unanimous consent. This committee motion does not need a second. Ms. Griffin.
This also passed the SCALP Committee unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion to the motion on the board from the council? Anyone in the audience? Anyone online? Back to the council. Is there any objection to the motion on the board? Any abstentions? Motion passes by unanimous consent. Okay. So now the next couple of motions, one passed the Habitat Committee, and you'll see an amended motion from Ms. Griffin to address it. So move that the council adopt the following objectives for the Northern Edge Habitat Scallop Framework. Number four, manage harvest from the Northern Edge scallop resource in the short and long term by considering the size distribution of scallops, seasonality of fishing with regard to meat yield, spawning and recruitment potential in this area and other areas of the scallop resource across Georgia's Bank, and fishing behavior. And number seven, to the extent possible, consider gear interactions, including between scallop dredges and lobster traps. And that motion passed the Habitat Committee by unanimous consent. Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you noted, the SCALP Committee did have a motion to amend, John, I think it's 4A. And it should be highlighted in red, I believe, where, just waiting for that to pull up. And if it's not, I'll note where the amendments are. So move to amend on behalf of the SCALP Committee that the Council adopt the following objectives for the Northern Edge Habitat Scallop Framework. Number four, manage harvest from the Northern Edge scallop resource in the short and long term by considering the size distributions of scallops, seasonality of fishing with regard to meat yield, spawning, and recruitment potential in this area and other areas of the scallop resource across Georgia's Bank, and fishing behavior. This next sentence is the amendment. Rotational fishing should consider how to achieve harvest from a small area in an equitable and sustainable manner. Then number seven, to the extent possible, consider gear interactions between scallop dredges and lobster traps. And this next part is the amendment, and the impacts of dredge gear on ovigerous lobsters and the Northern Edge HMA.
That passed the SCALP Committee.
Sorry, yes, that passed the SCALP Committee unanimously. It's fairly obvious, I think it's fairly obvious from the wording, but Objective 7 specifies consideration of the seasonality of egg-bearing lobsters on the Northern Edge when developing alternatives for scallop access. And Objective 4 considers some practical management considerations given the likely scale of potential scallop access.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Griffin. So discussion from the Council on the motion to amend. You see the difference? If there's any questions about the difference, it's pretty straightforward. Any discussion on the motion to amend from the council? Anyone in the audience? Anyone online? Back to the council. Okay, so if this motion to amend should pass, it will become the main motion, and the main motion will go away. We clear? Excellent. Is there any opposition to the motion to amend from the council? Seeing none, is there any abstentions? Seeing none, motion to amend passes by unanimous consent. It becomes the main motion. Any further discussion on what is now the main motion? Is there any objections to the main motion as amended? Any abstentions? Seeing none, motion passes. Thank you. So that's it for goals and objectives. I do need a motion to initiate, if somebody would like to make that. Ms. Griffin?
I would move that the council initiate the Northern Edge Habitat Scallop Framework.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. It is, Ms. Patterson, are you seconding that motion? Second by Ms. Patterson. Any rationale? Seeing none, we've had enough. Ms. Patterson, anything from you? Discussion on the motion from the council? Anyone in the audience? Any objection? Any abstentions? Motion passes by unanimous consent. Ms. Bachman, Mr. Rashi? Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Good discussion. We'll see what happens next. So we have the salmon aquaculture. Do we need to take a 5-minute break, or do you want to run through it? I'll give you 5 minutes. Make it seven. I tell you what, it's 7:30. It's 5:31. I'll give you nine. So. Okay, if you could take your seats, please. Okay. We're going to try to take final action on our salmon framework right now. And what we're going to do is we are going to do a wind update first thing tomorrow morning. Okay. So with that, Ms. Bachman, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've seen a bunch of this previously. We are undertaking this framework because we have in the regulations both a prohibition on directed fishing and possession, but also an allowance for the council to authorize aquaculture. And so that's what this action is attempting to do. There's three different alternatives, which I'll go into: no action, and two that authorize aquaculture. You saw the slides earlier about the enforcement committee input. I'll show you those again. Just to note that both the advisory panel and the committee recommended alternative three, which is authorization through an LOA, is preferred. And as Eric noted, the purpose of today's discussion is to review those alternatives, ask any questions, and select a final alternative and submit the framework. So under alternative one, the council wouldn't establish a specific authorization to rebut the presumption that your farmed salmon are in violation of the regulations. Operators would need to provide their own documentation to address that on sort of an ad hoc basis. So aquaculture could, you know, still occur, but there wouldn't be a structured way for, and a standard way for operators to have a clear authorization that they're allowed to be possessing the farm salmon in the EEZ. Alternative two is the more complex of the two action alternatives, which would authorize possession, the kind of primary means being a letter of authorization, but then that alternative two also includes vessel and dealer reporting and permits and reporting, so federal level vessel and dealer permits and reporting. So there's language in the framework document about what elements would be included within that letter of authorization. The vessel and dealer reporting elements would enable us to track harvest and landings of salmon to kind of account for that through federal data systems. The permit requirement for vessels, the vessel permit requirement would then trigger a vessel trip report. And then if vessels hold a federal vessel permit, then they need to sell to a federal dealer, which then triggers federal dealer reporting twice a week. The point of this is really to be consistent with how reporting occurs in other fishery management plans. Alternative three is the simpler version of alternative two. When we came to you to talk about the draft alternatives in January, there was some concern that alternative three, the reporting measures, might go beyond what is really necessary for conservation of salmon, and so we added this third alternative to the document. And this is ultimately, as I mentioned, where the committee and the advisory panel went in terms of their recommendation. So under these, you know, under this alternative, either state or federal dealers could be buying the salmon. And then I think there's different kind of ways, depending on the state and how they report aquaculture data, that the data would make its way into the data warehouse, just depending on the state in which this fisher landed. So it's a little bit less strong of a data stream, but obviously a lot simpler of a program from an administrative standpoint. So the LOA would be, all the LOA measures are common to both alternatives two and three. They're written identically in the framework document. So operator of a vessel, you know, possessing Atlantic salmon, cultured Atlantic salmon, must transfer the fish consistent with the LOA. separate from other species. The one project we've seen proposed is also planning to culture steelhead, so they would need to be separate. We did talk about individually tagged containers, whether that should be a requirement, and vessels may kind of use the vessel as a container. As long as it's clear that they're farmed salmon, there didn't seem to be a really compelling conservation reason to require individual containers. Obviously, you know, the companies are going to have, you know, food safety and other provisions that's going to govern how they transport fish. But the tagged containers seemed beyond, you know, what was necessary for conservation purposes. Maintenance of a logbook, you know, so basic records on salmon volume, trip date, disposition of fish. In some cases, you know, most of these fish we presumably landed. Some of them might be mortalities and would need to be discarded. Dealer transaction records, which could be a vertically integrated company and is selling to itself. The vessel wouldn't be allowed to be in possession of or fishing for any other species other than those identified in the LOA, which could vary by company and by LOA, but would be clearly spelled out. And then we don't think that it's likely that commercial fishing vessels are going to be employed by aquaculture operations, but we did want to factor that possibility into the alternatives in the framework as we developed it, in case that is something that somebody does decide to do, so we don't need to come back to this action to figure out if our regulations address that possibility. So keeping that in mind, what do you do with your fishing gear when you're doing this aquaculture work? And where we landed through the committee process was that the gear would need to be stowed and not available for immediate use. We have other regulations that have that language, for transiting closed areas and other things like that. It shows up a number of times in the federal regulations for this region. And obviously, and we make this clear in the framework document, we're not talking about the gear that's used to take the fish out of the net pens. We're talking about gear intended for use in wild capture fisheries. So this is just a repeat of the Enforcement Committee considerations from before. One thing that kind of came up was whole versus processed salmon or salmon parts. If the species is being possessed under the letter of authorization, whether it's parts or whole salmon, we didn't think that really posed a conservation concern. There's no salmon minimum size, for example. Talked about potential fisheries enforcement inspection of aquaculture gear. We weren't clear that the enforcement officers would necessarily have that expertise. We didn't write the framework to grant that authority. Presumably, I think there's some flexibility that this could be done later through enforcement agreements, if appropriate or as individual projects are permitted, but that's something that the framework, I think, could be silent on. We also talked at the Enforcement Committee about the individually tagged containers piece, and I got to that already. We didn't know that would improve conservation, and so we left that out of the framework. And then also, this question about whether under alternative three, where there's only this requirement for the letter of authorization, whether VTRs would be required or whether VMS monitoring would be required. And so the answer is no. We're explicitly leaving VTRs out of alternative three. We were thinking that if it, was a fishing vessel that has other federal fishing permits that was working for an aquaculture company as a sort of tender and harvest vessel, that they could be exempted from VTR requirements and then just declare out a fishery for VMS. I think that might involve an additional VMS code to cover this, but it sounds like that's an easy administrative change from the staff I've spoken with. So again, both the AP and the committee recommended alternative three as preferred, feeling it was a simpler approach, that the additional vessel and dealer reporting didn't seem necessary and would be overly complex for our needs here. They did suggest stowage versus removal of gear, and that individual containers were not necessary. And so the alternatives in the framework are written consistent with this language. Just a little bit about the analysis we did in the document. We have a fairly broad affected environment sort of footprint. We were looking at where could salmon aquaculture potentially occur based on both depth and temperature constraints, biological constraints for the species. And so it's sort of the Georges Bank, Gulf of Maine region, offshore of some depth deeper than I think 100 feet and up to about 1,000 feet. In reality, probably a lot of these areas would be unsuitable for aquaculture operations like the top of Georgia's Bank, but this is kind of a broader footprint just to make sure we were including all the affected ecosystem components. The framework itself is not implementing any specific aquaculture project. We've talked about this before. So the direct impacts we estimated are based on the administrative effects of the framework, essentially. But we do talk about, because this action sort of sets up for authorization of future projects, we wanted to forecast what those potential future effects might be. And so there's a section of the impacts analysis for each VEC that goes into what the potential future effects might be. Overall, we think the direct impacts are negligible to maybe slight negative, just as like an administrative requirement that would need to be fulfilled. We actually think in terms of the human communities that the action alternatives that provide a structured framework for obtaining the LOA would be positive rather relative to no action, because it's just a clearer process. And there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of these potential future effects, just because we don't know how many projects might be authorized, kind of on what time scale, what the scale or size of the projects might be, where they might be located, et cetera. And all those issues are going to be looked at under individual project authorizations. So this just kind of summarizes what I just said. For most of the VECs, most of the direct or future effects, we can't really discriminate across the alternatives, but you know, for salmon, we think there's maybe some kind of slight positive impacts to the resource of having this clearer letter of authorization process, and again, some slight positive impacts on the human community side from having this clearer process. And human communities here rolls in fishing communities, those that might participate in aquaculture otherwise, as well as the sort of aquaculture industry and dealers. So you are here in April of 2023, and I'm hoping that we achieve final action and submission of the framework. I think we're very close on the condition of the document, so I'm hopeful that we could get that submitted at some point next month, and then implementation once it can be reviewed. And I think that's all I've got. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bachman. Any questions for Ms. Bachman before we put a motion on the board? Mr. Hughes, and then Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Michelle. If I could have you refer back to slide 25, and I can't recall discussing this, and it's when operating under an LOA for alternatives 2 and 3. Your second bullet point is maintain logbook, volume of salmon, trip date, fish disposition. The third bullet point is provide dealer transaction records. Are those dealer transaction records similar to dealer transaction records that somebody who's a wild harvest fish dealer would have to would also pertain to them? So I need to report to National Marine Fisheries Service my way out of my whole round fish. Is the disposition of this whole round fish, or is it finished product, or how are we getting, you know, the second bullet point is a captain's hail of what's basically coming in. And then the third bullet point, is that going to provide us with an accurate accounting of what's coming in so that we can actually see what they're saying they're producing versus what's actually being produced?
Yeah, so I think the intent there is that those provisions would be somewhat analogous to, you know, TRIB reports and federal dealer reports. To be honest, we didn't talk in a ton of detail as we were writing this up about how specific to get with those requirements. The agency is going to issue the letter of authorization, and we do have sort of a disclaimer that they would have some discretion to implement any other requirements that they would see fit. So this might be a better question for the agency and for Mike, but I think they would say in issuing the LOA, here's exactly what we're expecting from you in terms of reporting, but we're thinking some basic level of production reporting, and that doesn't necessarily need to go into federal data systems the way it would for alternative 3, the way it would for this alternative two, but I think it would be available to the agency. And then that, I think, would allow the council to ask NOAA, you know, what do you have from these operators pursuant to the LOA in terms of data that we might be able to look at.
Thanks, I'm appreciative of that. I'm on the Habitat Committee and I could not recall that question ever being asked. Yeah, I don't think we talked about it either. And maybe, Mike, if you have an answer, I don't know that you'd have an answer right off the bat, but what are your thoughts?
I don't necessarily have a definitive answer, but I can think of three types of dealers, if you will. There will be some, maybe there'll be federally permitted dealers, you know, dealers that are permitted under our normal wild harvest fisheries that will be receiving aquaculture salmon. They would report as they're required to report for anything else. Probably the same thing to the states for state permitted seafood dealers. But there might be fish coming into directly to the aquaculture company for processing and you know, value added type products that then go out for distribution. Believe, pretty sure the states all have reporting requirements for aquaculture farmed seafood that comes in to the state. So I would just want to, before we, you know, publish a final rule, we're gonna double check with our state partners and see what, if anything, they want us to put in this LOA related to the dealer side. We're mostly focused clearly on the vessels that are going to be transiting, you know, the EEZ with salmon on board. But we'll certainly work with our state partners to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and all that good stuff.
Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Michelle. If I missed this, please let me know. But, you know, you made a comment in here when we were talking, I think it was when you were talking about maintaining logbooks and talking about, you know, noting fish disposition and maybe having to discard some species, some salmon for whatever reason. I guess my question centered around, is there a component in this that allows discarding at sea or that discards at sea, or is that even an issue, or is it something that should be considered but hasn't been, or did I miss it?
Thanks. I believe that has come up in some of our discussions, and so we've gotten into this previously, and I didn't go into it today, but there's obviously a number of requirements for aquaculture permitting that are outlined in the document, and it's EPA is going to issue a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, or NPDES permit, for the project, which under that, both kind of effluent from aquaculture, finfish aquaculture, as well as the kind of the fish themselves could even be considered a pollutant. So what I was kind of given to understand would be that you wouldn't discard mortalities at sea. Those would be kind of brought to the dock. I think there might even be some uses, you know, turning them into fertilizer, things that we've talked about. But I think they would be retained and brought ashore. That's kind of my best understanding, and I think that type of element would be a condition of the NPDES permit. I think we could include language in the framework to that effect, you know, or make a note, you know, in submitting the framework to the agency that we would hope that, you know, different elements would be considered as part of those other permitting processes. And we can certainly comment on those projects when we get there, that we think that that's discarding at sea would be a problem.
And I appreciate it. I understand, you know, it sounds like what the EPA is putting out, it's maybe more in lines with the operation itself, not the transport, which I think we're working on here right now, is the transport from the pens to the facility. And I hate to come back to the world of the observer program, but there's no one on board these boats. And I'm not saying that they'd be doing it for good reasons or bad reasons, but I'm just saying there is that potential of discarding at sea that may more than likely never go noticed. So it's just something that I would like to see at least some mention of it in this document, or the ability to not do it is probably more appropriate to see in here. Thank you.
Mr. Pentney?
Yeah, I guess 2 points. I think the first is, you know, and Michelle kind of touched on this, these aquaculture facilities are going to have they're already going to have permits from the Corps of Engineers for the facility itself, and they're going to have permit from the EPA for a lot of stuff. So we don't want to like be duplicating or stepping on or creating potentially conflicting provisions as far as that goes. But I think you make a good point that once the fish leave the aquaculture pen and they're on a boat and they're being transported back to shore, it might be that our LOA is the sort of prevailing document at that point. And so we might want to add a provision, which I think we would look at, that says that, you know, possession of the LOA means you cannot discard any, you know, farmed fish while underway or while transiting EEZ. And, you know, I think that's a reasonable thing for us to look at. I just want to make sure, I don't want to commit to that we'll do that, because I want to make sure that we touch bases with the Corps and the EPA to make sure that we're not creating a conflicting requirement, but it's something worth looking into.
Thank you, and I do appreciate that. I mean, there are reasons why fish do get spoiled on a boat, and usually not set for human consumption, and you can see that may lead to some incentives. Why bring it in and go through the hassle of offloading it at a dock as opposed to, well, no one's over here, so there you go, over the side. So I would appreciate it if the agency does, you know, at least explore those options. I think that's an appropriate approach. Thank you.
Mr. Scalacci, do you want to add anything to this topic?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I understand it, you know, the net pen is the source, and the EPA rules on discarding dead or dying animals would apply, you know, not just at the site, but through the life cycle of the source of that pollutant. The other side of this, too, is that there are various dispositions that we expect. You know, fish dying is a part of aquaculture, and there's a ton of alternative uses beyond human consumption that these fish have that make them, you know, too valuable necessarily just to discard. So, you know, I think there's a couple of things here that make that unlikely, but we can certainly make sure from an EPA perspective that, you know, it's kind of cradle to grave as far as the disposition of these fish in the end.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Ware.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on the discussion of reporting and agree with the comment from the regional administrator about needing to coordinate with the states, because I went through a bit of a hypothetical exercise at the end of next week or end of last week about what permits this would trigger in Maine if this was happening off of Maine waters. And it gets very complicated very quickly. Some of our aquaculture permits are tied to leases. If there's not a lease in state waters, is a permit needed? There are different reporting requirements for different species. I think my ultimate conclusion was that there would be no harvester reporting, but there would be dealer reporting. So I don't know if the other states have done a similar hypothetical, but especially with staff that are more fluent in aquaculture than I am, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the council have any questions at this point? Anyone in the audience or online? Seeing none, Ms. Eitri.
Just a technical question. I know you're going to bring forward the committee motion, but in light of the conversation that we just had, is it just enough that it's been noted and the agency will look at that? We don't have to do any motions to amend or anything like that. Okay.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, with that, we do have a committee motion. I'm going to put that on the board. That would be great. Okay. Move that the council identifies alternative 3, LOA only, as preferred, including that gear stowage would be required according to the definition of stowed and not available for immediate use. And that passed the Habitat Committee by unanimous consent. Discussion on the motion on the board. Mr. Pentney.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I was holding this because it wasn't a question per se, it was more of a comment. You know, the only thing I'm concerned about here is the stowage provision of the motion in the LOA. I know it was at least discussed at through the committee process and also at the enforcement committee to make this a prohibition on fishing gear on the vessel. And, you know, I think there's a couple reasons for that. I know our enforcement agents, this is certainly their, would be their preference to have a prohibition of fishing gear on the vessel rather than the gear stowage. And I also note that the gear stowage regs that we have, which have kind of evolved over time, you know, over the years, are designed around transiting areas on a fishing trip. So, you know, they're designed to allow the gear to be used to fish and then stowed to either transit back in, say, you know, you're fishing out in NAFA waters and you're transiting back through the USEEZ, or you've done your fishing and you're transiting across a closed area. So they're kind of designed around this idea of you're going on a fishing trip, you do your fishing, and then you can quickly get your gear stowed so that you can then transit an area. And what we're really, I think, talking about here is more a trip that there would be, should be no fishing. On the trip, you should be going out to the aquaculture facility, obtaining the fish that you're going to bring back to shore and bringing that back. So there is a distinction there between the two activities in terms of the gear stowage, what the intent of the gear stowage regs versus what we're talking about here. I think there are, you know, we expect that there is probably going to be maybe all or certainly some of the vessels that were going to be used here are going to be, you know, unique aquaculture transit vessels that are not normal fishing vessels, but then there might be an opportunity for some fishing vessels to be chartered for this use. And so the question is, should the gear be on the boat when they're operating as a aquaculture transit or carrier vessel? So that's the only issue I have with this. I definitely appreciate the recommendation of the committee to go with the streamlined LOA approach, but I just have a little bit of concern about the gear stowage provision.
Any other discussion on the motion on the board from the council? Ms. Edry.
Just specific to the gear stowage requirement, we, I think, had a conversation very similar. We're kind of working through that process at the committee. For the most part, I think, and I allow other committee members to speak, everyone was kind of under the assumption there'd be unique vessels. But what we were trying to do was to create the opportunity, if there was going to be a charter with a fishing vessel, to not create an undue burden, because for some vessels, just having gear off the boat is actually a significant effort for them to do. So to try to create some opportunity for them to potentially have the charter but not be in a situation where they had to take their gear completely off. So we're trying to find that balance. But I think within the majority of the committee, and if I'm wrong, others can speak, we were just assuming the bulk of the transit would happen with unique vessels. So that was just trying to preserve something if a charter randomly did occur. So,
any other discussion on the motion from the council? Anyone in the audience? Anyone online? Back to the council. Okay, we'll call the question. Is there any opposition to the motion on the board? Seeing none, any abstentions? Seeing none, motion passes by unanimous consent. Ms. Bachman. Other than we need a motion to submit.
Yes.
If you're all done.
That's all I've got.
Okay, so I will move that the council submit the salmon, Atlantic Salmon Aquacultural Framework to NOAA Fisheries. Any discussion? Ms. Patterson? Or so, you need a second. You want a second, Olivia?
Yeah.
Ms. Patterson seconds the motion. Okay, very good. Sorry, I was getting ahead of myself. Any discussion? Any opposition to the motion? Any abstentions? Mr. Pentney abstains. Motion passes by unanimous consent with one abstention from the service. How about now, Ms. Bachman?
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else? Seeing none. We're going to do Wind in the Morning first thing. Thank you very much for your persistence and your participation. Sorry. And I'm going to turn to the Hospitality Committee Chair just to remind you. And after that, we'll start at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick reminder, if you're going to join us for hospitality, give blood before you start drinking. See you in a little bit.